You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Locked On Mets is free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. Today's episode is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online, where the game starts. Now, it is a Friday Farm Report, and we have a championship team to discuss. The St. Lucie Mets won the Florida State League. I want to go through that championship game and two of the top performers. Guys, the Mets just drafted into the organization this summer that have very bright futures with this team. So we'll go through that in the first segment. In the second segment, a Francisco Alvarez update is long overdue. He has been back after getting injured. He's been tearing the cover off the ball in September. So I'll talk about him and also Jose Budo, who had a great start the other night. Then we'll close the show with the Big League Club previewing this weekend series and what lies ahead for the New York Mets. Before we get to any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing at justbaseball.com, where I work as the managing editor. And the Port St. Lucie Mets have been really the team to follow all year, the best in the organization. Them and the Cyclones, the two single-A teams, are the ones that made the playoffs, double-A, triple-A, not great records for those clubs. St. Lucie has been where it's at, though. A lot of promising players that started the year there, like an Alex Ramirez that ended up moving on. And then now you look at some of the draft picks that the Mets just brought into the organization, like Kevin Parada and Blade Tidwell. And they were the guys that helped drive this championship run in the playoffs. You know, Kevin Parada, starting catcher, in the final clinching game, he goes 3-for-4 with two RBIs, scored a run. He was amazing. His playoff batting average finished off at a cool 571 with an OPS over 1,200. You have to love that. But Blade Tidwell, I mean, what a performance in that type of a game. And we talked about this a few weeks ago when I was mentioning them advancing to the championship. Maybe that was last week. Probably was last week. On vacation, you know, time has sort of escaped me here. But the last time I was discussing the St. Lucie Mets, I was going through the stakes that these games still have. And like I said then, like I'll say now, watch the celebration of these guys. These games do matter. Yeah, there's not 50,000 screaming fans. Yeah, it's not on TV, and you really aren't in front of many eyeballs, but you're still in a playoff atmosphere. You're still playing in games with stakes. You still want to win that type of competition. And for the Mets to have this guy that just got drafted go out five scoreless, allow just three hits, walk two, seven strikeouts, really impressive. And you look at what he did in St. Lucie this season. There's five starts. In the regular season, that is 1.93 ERA, only 9 1/3 innings pitched, but he did have 11 strikeouts. You go to the postseason, and Blade Tidwell did not allow a run in two starts, went 9 2/3, had 13 strikeouts to two walks. So the performance ticked up when the games mattered. And that's what you want to see from a guy that was just drafted, 21 years old, second round pick, 52nd overall. And the thing is, this is a Mets system that I think we're going to see soon has a ton of pitching, but you don't know who is going to be that guy, who is going to ascend. And Matthew Allen's always the one we're talking about, but coming off Tommy John, we just haven't seen him pitch. I mean, literally, he has not pitched in a professional game since that Tommy John. You know that his ceiling is higher than any other prospect, but you just don't know what he's actually going to look like when he gets there. You know, Tidwell, coming off his career in Tennessee in college, where he was really solid across his few years there. You know, he ended up pitching to a 3.53 ERA in college across two seasons, 141 strikeouts and 137 and 2/3. Now you got him in the system, fastball, you know, up in the, you know, upper 90s, to touch 97 in that last game. He's now going to go through probably a full season where he'll begin in Port St. Lucie next year. Could see him in high A in short order, and then you never know where he can go beyond that. With a college pitcher, you could see him in double A to finish off next season, and then you could be looking at someone that could make his big league debut in 2024. So really exciting to see another guy that has a lot of potential performing. And then Kevin Parada is someone that I think we talked about last week or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was. But he is a guy that can fly through the Met system in short order. Next year, will he start in low A? I'd be kind of surprised if he didn't start in high A. That's just what I think about his potential. The way that he is mature as a hitter, I don't think there'd be any question he could handle high A pitching to start the season. And if you start in high A, no reason you can't finish in double A and also be looking at a 2024 debut for the Mets. And you'll worry when you get to that point if you have two incredible catchers with Kevin Parada and Francisco Alvarez, an incredible problem the Mets may have in a year or two. For now, you just develop both of them and you see which one sticks. And obviously, Francisco Alvarez will be the one that sticks sooner and you expect for longer, as he really could become a face of the franchise type player for the Mets if he hits a ceiling. And as we know, Francisco Alvarez's ceiling is extraordinarily high, and that's why I'm feeling like I need to talk about him. It's been a couple weeks. I'm jonesing for it. It's been a while. We spent so much time this season on Mark Vientos, and then Beatty came up, so he got some love. Alvarez was out with that ankle injury. We just weren't sure when he was going to be back, if he was going to be back. Now he is back. Turn the cover off the ball, so I will go through what he's been doing lately in just a minute. But first, today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline is your cover this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline is where the game starts. They have your pro and college football betting needs and sports info this season. You can find all the latest football league developments, game matchups, news, and podcasts. They're your continued source for all of your sports wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. Again, the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events, including MLB, MMA, boxing, and golf. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. Francisco Alvarez. Now, early on, time spent in AAA, not necessarily the best. Struggled for sure. He was in AAA at the start of July. Really had a couple games at the beginning where he played in Binghamton. But overall, for the month of July, where he spent primarily his time in Syracuse, a 173 batting average, 366 on base, 423 slugging. He had three home runs and 52 at bats, 13 RBIs. Go to August before he got hurt. 59 at bats. 186 average, 314 on base, 339 slugging. You always appreciate that he was still, taking his walks, getting on base, but not necessarily, the type of performance that you'd expect from a guy that you want to see do more because, his bat is so prolific. But you got to give him time because here he is, 20 years old, facing guys on a nightly basis that are 5, 6, 7 years older than him in some cases. A lot of older prospects, a lot of 4A guys, major league pitchers still trying to hack it that are playing in AAA. It's tough to go from pitchers that in AA are focused more on their strengths, trying to further their careers and pitch to what they're good at, to then you go into AAA and guys can really game plan against you, find the holes in your swing. It's tough. It's why it's good to get that time in triple before you go straight to the big leagues. And what we're seeing now as he comes off the IL here in September is he has made some adjustments. He is comfortable and he is swinging a good bat. He has hit in all but two of the games since he's been back. Altogether, he's hitting 387 in September with a 441 on base and a 742 slugging percentage. I mentioned, three home runs in August in AAA, three home runs in July. That was in more at-bats. Now in just 31 at-bats, he has three home runs and two doubles, 10 RBIs, drawn two walks, struck out eight times. A lot of promising results for Alvarez. Go out, you finish out your season strong here. Next year, We'll see what happens with Francisco Alvarez. It's not going to quite be where we were with Pete Alonso in 2019, where he went into camp and he had that opportunity to break ground with the big league club, and it felt like he was expected to. Now, he had to go out and do it, and he did have an incredible spring. With Alvarez, I think in spring training next year, there's going to be a lot more that he would have to do to actually force the Mets' hand. I'd imagine that come this time, or not this time, but come opening day next year, I don't believe they would have found a way to rid themselves of, the James McCann contract. It will be interesting to see if they do, because if they do find a way to trade that contract, that would probably tell you what they think about Alvarez being on the big league club in 2023. But there's going to be some competition in camp. You're likely going to see McCann and Nito still around, so a little bit harder for him to break through when you have two big league catchers. But his bat is a game changer that those two guys just don't possess. So even if it's not breaking camp next year with the big league club, it would be pretty surprising if you don't see Francisco Alvarez by the All-Star break. That would probably mean something went wrong as far as the way his season was going, or injury, in my opinion, because the bat is so close to ready, and you're looking at a prospect that just changes the fortunes of your club, because how often do you get someone that could potentially hit behind Pete Alonso in the middle of the lineup and be a catcher? We've seen it in New York. A guy called Mike Piazza, who had a pretty decent career, I believe, with the New York Mets, that maybe ended in Cooperstown and also ended with his 31 hanging in the rafters. You don't want to put that type of pressure on Francisco Alvarez, but I'll tell you, the ceiling is certainly there. He's got 7 more games in AAA this year before their season ends on September 28th to finish out his year strong. Then you go back to developing for the offseason, get yourself ready for what will be a massive season for him. To close out our Friday Farm Report, though, I do want to note that Jose Budo is coming off a great start. He has been really good throughout the season. We did see him make his MLB debut with the Mets. One outing. Was it incredible against the Phillies? No. Gave up 7 earned runs, but I still like the way he fought and gave the Mets 4 innings in that appearance. And after he got comfortable in that start, you did see things tick up a bit, and you did find the pitcher that looked a little bit better and looked like, there was some promise there for him. So I like that. And obviously in August, he didn't have the great success across the board, but he spent time getting called up to AAA, then to the big leagues for a spot. That it was a lot to process for a young pitcher. Now he settled into AAA in September, and in 4 starts, you're looking at a 0.73 ERA across 24 and 2/3 innings, 23 strikeouts, only 2 earned runs allowed, 1 home run, 4 walks. His last outing, 7 strong last night, 2 hits allowed. Did not allow that run, only 1 walk and 11 punch outs. Really good performance. Imagine he gets 1 more to close out his season strong. And then Jose Budo, I do believe, not necessarily he's going to factor into the rotation next year, but he's on the 40 and he certainly factors into their depth. We went into this year and we've talked so much about the fact that the Mets had 8 starting pitchers on their depth chart when you threw in a Trevor Williams, Tyler McGill, David Peterson, along with the 5-man rotation they currently have. I think Budo can be that back-end 8th, 9th starter on a depth chart that you feel a little bit better about, where you might not have to get that extra veteran starter this offseason because you have someone who will be going into his age 25 season that has a lot of promise and will be right there at top of your rotation at AAA Syracuse. But that was a lot for a Friday Farm Report. The big league club is still in this push to win the National League East. I want to go through this weekend series here against the Oakland Athletics, what to expect, and what they have to do before next weekend series, which will define the Mets' fate when it comes to winning the National League East. We'll talk about all of that in just a minute, but quick, a word from our sponsors. The Oakland Athletics are 55-94 this season. You're playing them at home. That would be something to worry about if they were good at home. They're 30-46. I think it's slightly better than their 25-48 record. Actually, I read that wrong. Excuse me. They are worse at home. 25-48 at home. 30-46 on the road. Not that it matters when your team is as bad as Oakland. Look, it's not easy to go to the West Coast, but the Mets had a day off to get ready for this small West Coast swing, and they have a day off to recover from it. I hate to put the pressure on the Mets to go 5-0 before they play the Braves, but I'm going to do just that. The Athletics have not announced the starter yet. Maybe you'll see Adam Mahler. I don't even know where he's at. I did it the last time I was going through some stats on, I can't remember the pitcher, but I was looking at, you know, I think it was like the last 2 months. Maybe it was a Shohei Ohtani article I was writing for Just Baseball, where I was looking through American League leaders. Maybe it was George Kirby. I don't know. Bottom line, I was looking at starts since June, and basically the stats indicated that Adam Mahler had been the worst pitcher in the American League. So if you face that former Mets farmhand going up against Chris Bassett, the guy he was traded for, that would be a nice confluence of events. But you're not going to face pitching to be worried about. Their lineup's not good. You got Chris Bassett, Jacob DeGrom, and Max Scherzer. Must sweep. Go out, sweep this series, and then see where you are. Because the Braves are playing against the Phillies in Philadelphia, and you hope that Philly can maybe split that series. If they could take two of those games, you're in a good spot. Because then you go to next week, they get to face the Nationals again, the Braves do. So that's three more games that are winnable. And you never know. The Braves could reel off 7 in a row going into that series against the Mets. And if they do, the Mets would have to sweep this series and their 2-game set against the Marlins to continue to be even with them in the division, because the Braves are playing 2 additional games where they can get a half game each time and even this division with the Mets. And if that's the case, wouldn't that be symbolic to play 156 games in a season and to meet up for game 157 even? I certainly don't want that to be the case. I like the Mets to have a 2-game lead in the division where they could win 2 games in that series, get the tiebreaker, end up coming out of it with a 3-game lead with 3 games left to play, and they clinch. That's the ideal option. And as long as they win 1 in that series against the Braves, they will get that tiebreaker, which will take a little bit of pressure off. But the last thing I want to see is the Mets to get into that final series of the season where they're playing the Nationals and have to count on the Marlins to win a game, to win the division. You want to handle your business first. The best way to do that is to not get too far ahead of yourself looking at the Braves. Put your head down against 2 inferior opponents. You're on the road, but you're against a team that is a game away from being 40 games under 500 when you're 40 games over. I guess the Mets right now are 39 over. So 39 over versus 39 under. Bassett on the hill against his former team. A mound he's very comfortable with. You'd hope that Bassett wins on Friday, and then you got DeGrom and Scherzer. There's no reason the Mets should not sweep this series. And then you flip the script. You see where you are going into next week against the Marlins, and you'll be well-rested going against the Braves, which is important because the one thing to note here, Brandon Nimmo, we're still waiting to see. I'm going to check right now. I am recording this early in the day on my vacation here, so I can spend the rest of the day with the fam, rest of the week with the fam, before I get back to your normally scheduled Locked On Mets for Monday. But it is 12:45 and currently no update. I mean, last night, Brandon Nimmo says that he believed he caught the quad injury early enough that he'll avoid a major injury. But you just never know. That could still mean he's out for the next week and you're already missing Starling Marte. And who knows? The Mets might do that intentionally. They might keep Nimmo on the roster without putting him on the IL, which is perfectly a suitable strategy when you still have the 28-man roster. You can get by, and they might just try to bootstrap this thing to so that these guys can be healthy for that Braves series. But Jeff McNeil came out of it okay, so there's no reason, even without Brandon Nimmo, that you can't go out and sweep the Athletics this weekend. Anyway, that's going to be all for today's edition of Locked On Mets this week on Locked On Mets. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you follow, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you follow me on Twitter, @ThickelsteinRyan. Follow the show, at Locked On Mets. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Now for your second listen, check out Locked On MLB, hosted by Paul Francis Sullivan. Locked On MLB is where you want to go to stay up to date with everything going on in Major League Baseball. You follow Locked On MLB wherever you get podcasts.